Now it is time to play.
I came to bring the pain, hardcore from the brain. Let's go inside my astral plane. Find out my mental, based on instrumental. Record, hate, so I can write monumental methods. I'm not the king, but this is decaf. I stick them both the cream. Check it, just how deep can get. Deep as the abyss, and brothers is mad fish. Accept it, in your cross color, close your cross over.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of the Notorious POD. This one's going to be kind of a different and special podcast, not because I intended it to be so, but because thanks to a technology snafu, somehow when we recorded this podcast, my voice was completely missing. So what I'm going to have to do with this one is essentially do some edits so that, you know, we can have kind of my questions or my comments, you know, as best I remember them. And then here are the responses from our two, not just one, but two guests on this show. And it was an amazing show, which is why I'm so bitter and so angry about kind of, you know, what was lost. Having said that, you know, what they said was saved, and that's really the interesting and important part. So, episode 8, I actually interview and I speak with Bob Bemis of Procuring Cause, and as you know, the notorious B.O.B., who's also writing on The Notorious Rob, as well as Greg Robertson, who is the founder and CEO of WNR Studios, and he's the creator of the very popular Cloud CMA project. So, sorry, we're going to be missing a bunch of banter, but I think given the technical limitations of this podcast, I'm going to sort of try and repeat, you know, from what I remember, sort of my questions, my comments, and then try and edit in kind of what they had to say. Because, to be frank, I mean, it was such amazing content that I just felt it's necessary to, even if we have to do it this way, to get this word out to all of you. So with that, here we go, episode number 8. My first question was actually to both Greg and Bob, just asking them, you know, what's sort of the mood out there? You know, what are people's reactions to, you know, what went down at CMLS, the Boise meetings? When, you know, as I'm sure by the time you're listening to this, you know that the Realty Alliance came on and sort of let everybody know how unhappy they were with what was going on with the MLS. And Greg, you know, when we recorded this, had just been out at the MLS of Long Island event, and he had spoken to a number of people, and he was in California. So he gave his perspective, and then I asked Bob, kind of, you know, his perspective on it, and I thought their answers were truly interesting. So here they are.
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, I actually just attended two. I was at the California Association of Realtors show last week in Long Beach, so I got to meet, talk to a lot of MLS execs that were in Boise for CMLS. And then, of course, here, talking to the guys over here at the MLS of Long Island. And then the other people that I've kind of just either hit up on text or Twitter or just been giving me a call. And it's kind of mixed out there and a little bit confusing because some of the MLS executives I talk to, they tell me that, listen, I mean, I play golf with these guys. I have a great relationship with these guys. They've been the chairman of my board. So, you know, I didn't make any special calls, but the next time that I called him or them, there was, you know, really no issue that they were really concerned about because I keep the communication open. In some instances, and this is rare, so most of the time I heard from MLS execs is that they already do keep a close communication and they're not worried because they have that communication line open. But in some cases, when they did call up their representatives or the brokers, they were surprised by the tone. Saying, well, you know, I don't want to leave the talk right now. Maybe we can wait till after the meeting. Thank you for the call. You know, those kind of pleasantries, right? But so a little bit mixed, but I would say it'd be weighted more on the I already have a good relationship. I'm not much worried about it.
Well, I think the mood at the moment when the panel was discussing the relationship between MLSs and brokers was very much, well, this doesn't apply to me. As Greg said, I've got good relationships with all my brokers. And then as the discussion proceeded, I think you could see and feel a little shifting in the chairs in the audience as the squirming started to take over. And the CEOs in the audience probably started to second guess whether or not their perception of their relationship with their brokers was indeed really, really good, as they all thought it was. Even Bob Hale publicly said during that panel Q&A or shortly thereafter, he said, I'm on good terms with all my major brokers. And then he paused for a second and he hesitantly said, perhaps except one. And you know, if that one is a major player in the Realty Alliance or leading RE, then Bob obviously has a couple phone calls to make when he gets home. And I'm sure he did. He's been very one of those CEOs that reaches out and tries to consult with his brokers before bad things happen. So I'm sure he made that call.
And next I asked him, you know, about what we, the three of us, saw at CMLS and what we saw in Boise and what we heard. And I think, you know, I pointed out that the three of us, Bob, Greg, and myself, were probably the most vocal, at least of the online commentators. And the Realty Alliance actually had come out and essentially said, all these online guys, you know, they're totally wrong. They got it completely wrong. So we just kind of had a good laugh about, you know, about what we got wrong. And then I asked Greg and Bob both, and we had a really interesting conversation, you know, about what we think is going to happen. You know, are they serious? You know, will the Realty Alliance do something? What does this mean? You know, it's just kind of a more of a general take. And here's sort of what, at least, like I said, you know, what Greg and Bob had to say about that.
which is interesting because the three of us took very different positions on what we were hearing and how we reacted to it. So I don't know how we could all be wrong at the same time. But
yeah. And also, if I remember correctly, Bob, on their Facebook page, they actually gave you kind of a shout out in regard to one of your posts, right? So maybe you're less wrong than all of us.
Well,
right. I think two things. The first thing that my knee jerk reaction was, and I don't know Craig Cheatham at all, right? I've heard his name, but I thought at first it was kind of disrespectful what he was saying to a lot of the professionals in the audience that have been working hard and, you know, really take their job seriously. And it's, you know, it's such a tough job to manage different levels of brokers and make sure everybody's happy. I mean, it's really just a thankless job in some respect, almost like him. I mean, I can imagine him having to work for all those big brokers. But so I was really knee jerk, like, you know, who is this guy? But, you know, later on, I talked to people who know him that said, no, he's a good guy. He's just got a tough gig. And I can totally understand that. And then the second thing was kind of like, after I thought about it, it was just, as I said on stage, it was a little bit boring. I mean, this whole leveling the playing field, the MLS's role is not this, it's not that, we need to do this and that. It's just the same thing I've heard year after year after year after year, right? So, but there was a little bit of posturing with this 10-day deadline and then them coming back and saying, well, there is no deadline. Yeah, they walked a lot back. So my knee jerk was like I was really offended, but then I think I understood a little bit more. But then if I just kind of take a high level view, it's like it's really just the same thing we've actually heard, you know, time and time again. Yeah, I don't think it's gonna. I think that these guys are all very smart, astute businessmen, and I think the market's turning where, you know, it's been turning where it's becoming a little more hot and active. And they ought to go out there and sell as much real estate as possible, and they're going to be focused on that, not on these kind of chess games that are really not their core competency.
Well, Greg has a point, up to a point, that yes, we've heard all this before multiple times over the years, but my take is that Realty Alliance, in making that presentation, appearing on that panel at CMLS, was. I think pushed to a point where now they're tired of discussing it and it's really time to put some meat behind what may have appeared to be idle threats. I think they are serious, and quite frankly, I don't think there's a stupid broker in the group. These are smart people. They're very successful business people. They've made huge investments in their brand, in their technology, in their public presence, in their websites. They're not going to walk out on a limb that they're not absolutely confident that they can stay on, and not have somebody cut that limb off the tree. So for them to have made these statements tells me that there's a whole lot more brewing under the surface. Yes, we've had these discussions. Yes, we've gotten tired and bored of hearing them over and over again, but they've cast it in a new light. They've positioned it now to, we're tired of talking. It's time to take some action to show that we're serious. And I don't think they're in it alone. There have been nuanced references either on the Realty Alliance Facebook page or even in the comments that were made on that panel, that they are not alone and they don't intend to be alone, which implies to me, I infer from that statement, that they've got backing from and have had conversations with some of the other major franchise brands. And you can just start down the top 10 list with the Realogy Group of, you know, Coldwell Banker, Century 21, ERA. Jump over to Realty Executives and REMAX. And pretty soon you're talking about a substantial percentage of the sum total of agents who are out there in the field practicing real estate. I think they got to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that is just so tinfoil hat conspiracy. Those guys would never work together on such a large. I just can't. I mean, I can see maybe a group like the Realty Alliance doing something, but, you know, adding in a major franchise like REMAX and Keller Williams and everybody else, those guys are not going to work together on that. They're out there fighting the war against each other.
Well, I disagree because I've seen them work together. 2 years ago when we had the franchiser IDX rule come before the MLS committee, and at that time I was still on that committee, and I was on two of the task forces that were charged with looking at that issue as well as IDX in the social media realm. In the franchiser IDX, the two sides were diametrically opposed. Realty Alliance was against franchiser IDX. Realogy and the major franchisers obviously were in favor of it. And when that rule was passed and approved, and then 6 months or a year later was disapproved, that was a battle. And Realty Alliance won that. They got that franchisor IDX was allowed to be, but it was done on an opt-in basis, and ListHub created that franchise network for it to be able to work. Now you come along with the change in definition of basic service or core service an MLS can offer and charge all of its participants and subscribers for that service. And both of these large groups were against that because they didn't want the MLSs subsidizing a public site that they felt was competing directly with their brand sites. And they got together on that one. They didn't win the first round, but I've read now that it's going to be reconsidered at the NAR convention in San Francisco in a couple of weeks. So that tells me that they've put some pressure collectively as a group on the NAR, and they're going to push this thing through and have that definition of core service redefined not to include MLS public-facing websites. So they can work together, and we're about to see it work.
Next, I asked Bob, you know, because he used to be the CEO of a very large MLS, Arizona Regional, you know, and with his experience and background, like, when did this happen? When did this conflict between MLSs and brokers, particularly large brokers, you know, when did he first start to see it really, you know, evolve? And we had spent time talking about, you know, these are comments and complaints that we've heard for years and years. So I was just curious, just asked him, you know, did he see a certain point at which, you know, which the relationship flipped, you know, that where large brokers were not, you know, didn't have any problems with the MLS per se, and then eventually, you know, sort of started thinking you're competing and this is a real problem?
I don't think you're looking for any particular point in time when things just magically and suddenly changed. I think this is an evolution of MLSs all engaged in scope creep over the years, adding a little bit here, adding a little bit there, until they got to a point where a big issue, and in this case the big issue is public-facing websites supported by MLS dues, that was now the trigger for them to go back and say, hey, this is a huge problem. And oh, by the way, while we're talking about huge problems, here's a list of 47 other things that have really ticked us off over the last 5 years, all coming to a head. I read a great book on how to have a successful marriage. It was called The Intimate Enemy, and the concept was when you fight with your spouse, you cannot do what they call gunny sacking. That is, you take all your little complaints about the toothpaste tube and the dripping water in the sink and the dirty dishes, and you shove them in your gunny sack until you get to the point where there are so many things in the sack that you now pour them all out in the middle of the table and start fighting over everything. And that's what it feels like has happened here. A lot of little irking things over the years have built up, and now the trigger issue is public-facing websites and being supported by the MLS as a whole. And that was just the impetus and the catalyst for them to bring out all these other complaints that they've been gunny-sacking for so many years.
And this is where I made the point that, you know, from my perspective, listening to all of this, listening to CMLS, listening to Craig Cheatham from Realty Alliance, that I felt that it wasn't necessarily a particular product or service or mission creep, but it actually had more to do with governance. It actually had to do with power. That it almost felt like what these large brokers were saying is they don't have enough control.
I think you're on target there. NAR gave large brokers as a whole bunch of seats on their board of directors some years ago, like 70 or 80 seats. But at the local level, you're right, they're probably represented on an average board of a major MLS is probably 10 to 15 directors, and they might have one or two seats. So they could very easily be outvoted by smaller brokers or, depending on the way the MLS is structured, even by agents. And one of their points in their published list that Greg Larson so kindly put up was that when you have an agent on your board of directors, if you assume that that agent satisfies the representation of the broker, you're mistaken. That's point 16 in their long list. And I think they're just, they get a little frustrated with that. They'd like to have more input and more say-so in the overall structure governance of the MLS.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough thing because I think at a root level they're entrepreneurs, right? They want to move fast. They want to make decisions fast. I mean, that's their world. They have to do that in order to succeed in business, right? But then when you get to down to a level where you're talking about associations, you're talking about MLSs, there's a lot of rules and procedures and policies and committees because, you know, they're representing a whole varied group of business people, smaller brokers, independent, you know, brokers, franchisor brokers, big brokers, little brokers, you know, all. And that takes, you know, in order to kind of make that happen, to make that cooperation and competition happen, there's a lot of policies and procedures. And the big brokers, just they don't live in that world. They don't want to live in that world. I have sympathy for them, right? But at the same time, sometimes, you know, those things are in place for reasons. And, you know, I'm sure that if you, you know, they can point at one particular thing like saying, that's ridiculous. But then some MLS exec is going to go back, well, I'll tell you the story of why that's there. Because some agent from this old broker office abused this policy and we had to put that in place because blah. I mean, I hear those kind of things all the time. So I definitely have sympathy for them because I'm an entrepreneur myself and I don't like these kind of jumping through hoops and, you know, having to monitor and be on that group or be on that board or things like that. But, I mean, that's like crying because the sky is blue, right? It's just blue, baby.
Where we went next from there was sort of talking about the specific action. My sense was that the Realty Alliance came out fairly strong. And, you know, I'd heard large brokers, I'd heard the Realty Alliance, I'd heard Home Services and others say at, say, mid-year that they're unhappy and they're going to make some changes. This time it felt like a real threat, really. And, you know, and I think what I ended up asking Greg and Bob both was, do you feel like now that they have to do something? Like, this can't be just empty saber rattling, that they have to take some real action here.
They've been making those statements for years. They haven't done anything.
Well, let's draw a parallel to the recent issue with chemical weapons in Syria. We made a statement, if you use chemical weapons, we're going to bomb you into the Stone Age. They used chemical weapons, and then we found a way not to have to pull the trigger on the atomic bomb, which was to get them to get rid of their chemical weapons. So analogy now is Realty Alliance, speaking on behalf of yet unnamed other parties in association with them, has said, you got to change your ways, and here are the 46 things you need to look at. And if you don't, then something could happen. But the alternative is you do. The MLSs listen, and they do make some changes, and they do follow some of the suggestions that Realty Alliance has made, in which case no need to bomb anybody or pull the trigger or push the red button or any other analogy we want to use here. There's still a way to recover from this precipice, this looking over the edge, and pull back without jumping over the side.
I made a point here, just simply suggesting that that may all be true, and perhaps we're not going to have a whole lot of conflict, but given kind of where things were, I felt like they had to do something. I felt like the Realty Alliance had to do something to show just how serious they are. So I asked them, you know, do they think it's possible that that they might sort of isolate one MLS, you know, where they have a lot of market power and they really could do something? And kind of make an example of out of one, you know, just sort of pick an MLS and say, this is an MLS that's bad. You know, they do all these things we're not happy with. And we're going to show, you know, show the rest of the industry what we can do here and show just how serious we are and kind of make an example out of one. Here are their answers.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so, no, I see that, you know, they basically said, you know, this is going to be our kind of template or our ground zero, right? So this is, we're going to focus all our attention on this one MLS. We're going to do what we want to do in this area, and that's going to serve as a kind of a template for what could happen all over the place. I mean, that's an interesting strategy, right? I think that's smarter than going global. Yeah. Right. But again, you know, it's so far off their core, right, of what they do. To me, it's a huge distraction, and I don't think that the list of 47 or anything else aren't anything that they can compromise on or live with, or you know, just a cost of doing business things that they can continue in the structure that it has now with a little tweak, sure. That is going to outweigh doing something as you know, setting up an example site, you know, or example territory, or these other things. And the time suck and the and the attention that they're going to get away from their core business. I just don't, they're smart business people. I just don't see them looking at this, you know, these challenges and saying that the nuclear option is better. I just can't see it.
I'm hesitant to think that they would pick out one MLS to make an example of. I think that would really expose them to some liability that they probably don't want to take on. And if you look down through their list of complaints, a lot of them apply in general to a lot of MLSs, not just one or two. And many of them emanate from the national level on down in the form of the model rules that NAR creates and distributes, and many of those model rules are marked as mandatory. You have to comply with them, or you risk losing your charter and your insurance from.
So naturally, I asked Bob, what are these model rules? What are some of these things that NAR is doing that he thinks brokers are upset about? Here's his answer.
Well, we've got a model. Well, actually, I go the other direction. There's a model rule in the VOW settlement with DOJ that says you've got to provide data to virtual offices as you do to bricks and mortar offices. You can't withhold data that would prevent them from operating as a brokerage. And yet there are MLSs out there that do exactly that. I had a phone call yesterday from a potential consulting client who said, we're having a real hard time with a core of about 10 or 15 MLSs who just refuse to allow us to license data on behalf of the brokers to be able to deliver a broker service or a broker product into those marketplaces. So So I'm fighting with myself on this one. Here's an example of an NAR rule that the Realty Alliance likes, but that the local MLSs are not fully implementing with everyone. The other one, and this is not a model rule, but MLSs that accumulate excess amount of money and either hold it in reserve or have been making a practice of paying that money back to their local associations as sort of a subsidy or a dividend for owning an MLS, I think that really rubs them the wrong way. I think there is an undercurrent here of disliking the association between a board of realtors and its operating MLS, particularly when it comes to the MLS subsidizing the board. I mean, how many polls have we seen where agents are asked, what's the major reason you join a board of realtors? And the number one answer is always to get the MLS. So if the three-way agreement, that is, you have to join national, state, and local association in order to get into MLS, were to be challenged, as it has been in a couple of federal district courts, if that were to be challenged nationwide, then the mandatory coupling could be uncoupled. And I think the agents and the brokers would really see that as a step forward. I think they feel like they're paying for a lot of stuff by supporting their board of realtors that the board of realtors has not shown to be valuable enough for them to subscribe as a member without the MLS.
So given the connection between, you know, sort of the association world, you know, the NAR, the model rules, realtor association, I think Bob is exactly right that, in fact, I know he's right, that the number one reason why people join associations is the MLS. So things are really coming to a head. And, you know, what I was sort of curious about, because Bob had served, you know, in the MLS policy committee, you know, he's been an MLS CEO, and he has a lot of experience working kind of within the structure as they exist today. So I kind of wanted to know, you know, what could be done and how quickly? Like, you know, what's the timing on all this? Is this something that could be fixed relatively quickly? And here's Bob's answer. The question was, just how difficult is this to fix through the system as we have today?
It's not difficult. It's almost impossible. Let's face it, NAR has not traditionally made snap decisions about anything. We studied social media IDX displays for 2.5 years, and at the end of that period came up to the decision that, well, we don't know how to regulate this, so we'll just boot it back to the MLSs to do it themselves. Policy decisions at the MLS committee level are slow in happening, and perhaps more frustrating, are not binding on the NAR as a whole. And we saw that with a couple of recent decisions where the committee would recommend one way, the executive committee changed that to something else, and then the board of directors, when they got their hands on it, changed it to yet a third thing. So, and that has to do with the franchisor IDX rule. That was just all over the place. And that kind of inability to govern in a structured, organized, fair and democratic way, I think, is one of the core frustrations that I'm reading between the lines in this litany of complaints that they have.
Well, I mean, then let's throw into the mix that NAR is looking for a general counsel, right? So, yeah. So, I mean, with Lori Janik gone, that things are going to get slower, right? So it's not. I don't think there's any signs of that of getting a faster process. But, you know, again, this could be, and maybe Bob kind of went down this road a little bit, but maybe this does turn out to be where they pick a couple. NAR says, okay, there's a lot of hubbub here. Let's try to kind of manage this and let's bring these three issues up to thing, placate them on some level of getting something done there to make them feel better. And then again, we all move on, right? Maybe something like that could happen. I don't know what of the 47 could be that, but there could be something, a deal could be made, so to speak. And I think maybe that would probably be the best solution for all of this. Some sort of deal is made with some of their hot button issues on a NAR level, and we all go back to selling real estate.
Or we appoint a task force to go study for 6 months and come back in May.
The next topic I would want to know was, okay, in all the communication, you know, from stage at CMLS, there was a lot of discussion of communication, right? That communication has fixed this. That miscommunication is the problem. Craig Cheatham and people like Greg Larson and a number of MLS people got up and said, look, we need to communicate better. This is a communication issue. And what I wanted to know from both Greg and Bob was, you know, when we talk about communication, what are we talking about? I mean, what is the miscommunication that's going on? Because, you know, as we began the show, I mean, Greg was talking about MLS CEOs who said, look, I have great communications. I talk to my brokers all the time. So, you know, what were their thoughts on this sort of communication problem and, you know, just how far could communication go to solve the problem, you know, as we saw today?
Yes and no. Again, I think there's two levels of miscommunication. You know, the first level is, as I said, a lot of MLS execs tell me they have great communication with their brokers. And those brokers have said back to them, I understand what the issues are. I'm a part of this group, but they're not really in our market, right? So to me, that says the disconnect between Realty Alliance members, right? The second thing would be, sure, I'm absolutely positive that there are some MLS execs that don't do a good job of reaching out, right? I mean, of course. I mean, that's, you know, not every market's the same. Not every person's the same. So there are probably places out there like that, right? So I think it's, as I said, there's kind of two levels, one within their own organization of Realty Alliance, and then in some markets, there might be a disconnect as far as miscommunication or any sort of communication between the broker and the MLS itself.
Yeah, it's certainly a key, but communication has got to be a two-way street, and the parts of that two-way street that aren't working at the moment are the occasions when there's feedback coming from major brokers back to the MLS saying, thank you for telling me you're about to do this. I really don't think you should do this. And then the MLS does it anyway. So it's not just telling each other what we're thinking, but getting into a dialogue where a decision can be made based on input from both sides, and that decision is respected by all the players that have to live by that decision. In those MLSs where the decision-making is done by groups, committees, boards that are not completely representative of the marketplace, I think is where TRA has a problem with communication. You got a bunch of agents on a board of directors who don't necessarily speak for their broker. They speak for their agentship. And they make decisions about how the MLS should be run that may be counter to the best interests of the brokers. And at that point, TRA has an issue and I think a major point. They need to be properly represented, their voices need to be heard, and they need to be proportionally represented in the decision-making process based on their market presence. How big are they in that market? And that was one of their major points in their list was, you know, if we represent 55% of a market, then we should have 55% or something close to it input into the decision process.
Now, this was in line with, you know, kind of what I thought was happening here. I read this entire fight, this entire kerfuffle, essentially as a power struggle between brokers who represented very large parts of the industry, feeling that they didn't really have control over one of the most important institutions in the industry, which is the MLS. So I felt like with all the discussion around communication, but that it since it led to this discussion of proportional representation, I wanted to ask both the guests, and I wish I knew exactly what I had said because I remember being pretty good, but oh well, it's lost to memory. But essentially what I was asking was, look, could one of the things here, could the play here be trying to get NAR to change governance, really at the NAR policy level, saying to MLSs, Going forward, what we would like is we would like your governance to be somewhat more reflective of proportional representation in the marketplace, whether that's by agent count or transaction size or, I mean, transaction numbers or agent count or, you know, however you want to do it, you know, that NAR would essentially force the MLSs to go to more of a proportional type governance model, some sort of new governance model that would make the larger brokers happy. And I thought it was an interesting discussion that followed. Here you go.
I don't see that happening, no. But I think there has to be at least some constitutional convention equivalent that will readdress the governance structure of most of the MLSs. Because I don't think any of them, with the exception of a few that have been reforming their governance in the past few years. I know Chicago did it within the last couple of years. MRIS has done it. Arizona, where I came from, just did it and looked at proportional representation and created permanent seats for the large brokerage community and permanent seats for the smaller ones. And if you got three big brokers and three small brokers and then a few at-large seats, you have a more democratic representation of the market as a whole. And it goes right to their point number 11 in their list, have a governance structure that is equitable based on market activity. And I think that that would go a long way toward creating the place where this communication could be had.
But don't forget. I mean, this is not. I mean, there are some markets where this is going to affect it greatly, but other markets it doesn't really affect it at all. I mean, like in Southern California, there's so many brokerages out there. Not one of them, even if they have proportional votes, it's not really going to make that big a difference. Now, up in, let's say, the Northwest, like Northwest MLS, I mean, you know, they have big brokers, or maybe North Star MLS, they have, you know, large proportion of big brokers that control the market, but it's in pockets, right? It's not a real this issue isn't like everywhere, right? It's in different markets around the country, so it's not, I don't, you know, as far as it being a major issue, it's a major issue in some markets, but it's not a major issue in others, right?
I'm pretty sure I asked Greg at this point, you know, since he is a MLS technology vendor and he works with MLSs. As a result, he's got to, you know, sometimes present with MLS boards or technology committees. You know, if he saw a difference, you know, in the way that he's able to do business with MLSs where you have boards that are more dominated by big brokers versus boards that are perhaps, you know, much more widespread, you know, much more smaller brokers, agents, so on and so forth. And I just thought his perspective on it as a tech vendor was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, every MLS is different. It's like, you know, the slogan in this business. But, you know, in some regards, we're big brokers where they charge a technology fee, let's say, to their agents for certain uses of technology. They don't want to be in competition with the MLS as far as providing tools, right? In some areas, the MLS, you know, wants to help all the agents. And maybe they don't have a lot of big brokers, so they welcome maybe a site license of tools like ours or others, right? Although the site licenses are becoming fewer and fewer to get, but in some markets, you know, they still go for them. So it does depend on each market. And again, just like I said before, it affects some markets, but not all, right? I can work one way in Northwest MLS, but an entirely different way with CRMLS in Southern California, right? Those are, you know, those are different markets, different broker dynamics, and we have to adjust accordingly.
And now we get to what is literally my favorite part of this entire podcast, which happened 40 minutes in. You know, we had essentially covered, you know, sort of what we felt like the MLS side of the industry were feeling, you know, what was sort of the feeling around it. You know, we covered a little bit of, you know, how serious is this threat, you know, how realistic is it that, you know, the Realty Alliance is going to do something. And, you know, we had sort of talked a little bit about governance and this being a power play and so on. So what I asked them was, and, you know, I'd already written a post in which I said, look, if the Realty Alliance and, you know, whoever its allies are were going to do something, what could they possibly do, given some of the constraints that they're working under? that would put a lot of pressure on the MLS. That would hurt the MLS. And, you know, my post on the subject, I hypothesized, totally theorized that they would pull out of IDX. And clearly, you know, according to Real Times, we were dead wrong. So just kind of ask them, you know, what have they heard? What do we think is coming? You know, not that they're going to push a red button, but if they were going to push a red button, what form would that take? And I got to tell you, I found this discussion absolutely fascinating.
So this is correct. I've heard two different scenarios out of Boston, right? And I've heard these from multiple sources who have told me, oh, you know, you can't talk about this or you can't write about that. But I've heard the same thing from, you know, like five different people. So that means everybody kind of has this information, right? And I think that the scenarios that are being floated around now, and I think they've been changing, is one where they create what I would call a national broker website. Think of it like what Orbitz is to the airlines, right? So the airlines were pissed off that Expedia and everybody else was like syndicating their tickets on those sites, but they didn't really see a lot of benefit to that. So a lot of the airlines got together and said, we're going to make our own site, Orbitz, and that, you know, that benefits us directly. So to me, there's going to be one option on the table is they're going to make their own national website that has their own listings on there that they're all going to get behind, which to me is suicide. But, you know, that's, I think, one thing. Another option is that they form their own kind of data share or MLS, right? Which, again, I think is a very tough thing to swallow as well because, talk about governance and talk about distraction, you know, setting that up. Is it in one area? Is it national? Is it what? I mean, just to set that thing up, I think would be just a massive time suck and a brain drain that they could – all the problems on the table now, they could – I won't go down that road, but you know how I feel about that. But I think those are the two things on the table. You either go, you know, with this national broker website or you go with this data share. Now, does that mean they pull out of IDX? I'm not 1,000% about that now. I know that – I think that's been on the table before. But, you know, a private MLS, sure, I think that's on the table right now.
I've watched or looked at that and reread that phrase, technology that wasn't available as recently as a couple of years ago. I'm trying to figure out what that means. What are the new tech things that have come recently that we haven't seen until now?
Fingerprint sensor?
Yeah, that works well. I'll tell you, the perhaps not technology, but business practice that we're seeing now that MLSs are pulling their hair out over is the non-listing of premium properties through the MLS, the pre-listing concept or the private agent network concept. You get 1,500 agents together and preview coming properties. Well, what if that concept were extended to a much larger level to where these major players were now exchanging through a private network? And I mean, you can do it on Facebook, but why bother? Just do it through your back office systems and exchange listing information with each other prior to it actually being either in the MLS or distributed via IDX. Is that enough to give everybody a taste and a preview of what might happen if either Greg's scenarios came true and they either pulled out of IDX or pulled out of MLS? The other non-technical thing, I keep going back to it, is disconnecting NAR's dues structure from MLS's participation. And you have a couple of major MLSs in the country that are now broker-owned, broker-operated, broker-governed. MLS PIN in the East Coast, Northwest MLS out here in Seattle, FMLS in Atlanta. What would happen if the brokers just said, we're going to challenge that. We're going to discontinue paying our realtor dues, but we want to continue to be in the MLS. Which MLS is going to step up and tell us we can't do that? That one I don't know the answer to.
We had a little bit of discussion here actually about what Bob suggested, that, you know, rather than being about IDX or anything else, it would be essentially brokers creating kind of a mechanism by which their people can do pocket listings, you know, pre-market type of activity, and then create a network around it. And that sort of evolved into a discussion of portals, because I think Greg had thought that what the Realty Alliance, what he had heard was kind of the nuclear option was a new national portal after sort of an Orbitz type model. So we got into a little bit of discussion about that. But there was also this point to be made about, you know, what could an MLS do? I mean, is this within the rules? And the answer is it is, as long as the...
And to get the national exposure to the big brands, they entice the seller to sign off on that, then they'd be perfectly within their rights within the current structure. And perhaps they do that as kind of a shot across the bow, implying that if we can do this, we can do even more. Time to sit around the table. Let's talk. So.
Well, you could do that, but, I mean, you have to advertise that. You got to get people to come to that. That's so difficult. The money that's spent on SEO and SEM and advertising to get people to notice you on the web is ridiculous, right? It's such a monumental effort. I just don't see, you know, again, it's just a huge time suck and a resource drain and money and everything else. It's they're smart business people. For them to go say we're going to launch a portal, oh my God.
I don't see that as a portal. I see that as just a private exchange of information. I doubt that they would even publish the properties that they have in their pocket on the web for anybody to see until they did put it in the MLS and it did go to IDX and then off to the syndication sites. So.
And we had a kind of a fun exchange here where obviously three of us, weren't the folks involved. So, you know, because the Realty Alliance have come out and said, look, we have documents and we spend years preparing and consultants have been hired. And I figured none of us were consultants on this. So, you know, who do we think was helping? Who do we think are the main thought leaders behind this effort? And I thought about just dropping it, but I included because there's a really funny exchange kind of between Greg and Bob about, you know, about how MLS is and how MLS people kind of see the consulting and advisory and vendor type folks. And I thought it was just worth including.
Well, I mean, if you, I don't think it's any, I don't think it's anything, I don't know where I go down the road here.
I refuse to answer on the grounds it may incriminate me with the rest of my friends in the industry.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not.
Vendor.
It's right up your alley, Vendor Alley. No, I mean, I, it's not me. You know, what the hell does anybody want to listen to me for? But I think if you look at, like, where all the Twitter streams are coming from and the Instagrams, you can see the people that are in Boston right now that are in the industry, right? So I don't think it's a far stretch to kind of identify those people, right? I can't say with any certainty whether or not they've been contracted as any main vendors or any, you know, if they're the actual strategic heads of it. But I think the names have been out there. Wave Group is one name I've heard a lot of. I'm not sure about Clarity, although I know that Greg does work with some of the brokers there. And then I think there's maybe an outside kind of consulting. I mean, you know, we're all kind of like within our own kind of group. We know the players there, but there's, you know, there's a world of consultants out there, right? So, I think there's probably another couple or one player out there that's outside the industry that we may not know about, but that has been consulting as well.
I'm pretty sure I made a crack right around here about knowing a guy, you know, who used to be a major MLS CEO, used to work at Zillow, knows about portals, and could probably help either Realty Alliance, you know, run some sort of network or some sort of effort like this. And we had a laugh about it, and I think that led Bob to make the crack about it initially at the start of this clip before he goes into the overall question.
I'm gonna stand on my Fifth Amendment rights, except to say that, yeah, I think they probably, if they're getting advice from any of the traditional industry consultants that Greg just mentioned, it's probably from a strategy standpoint. These folks certainly have enough technology people in the back room to talk to their hardware vendors, their network vendors, their storage vendors, to pull this technology solution together without going out into the open marketplace. They're certainly not talking, at least I wouldn't think so, to traditional MLS vendors. It's probably not LPS. It's probably not CoreLogic. So they've got the technology in their back pocket. They may need some business advice, and the folks that Greg mentioned are certainly some of the leading business advisors out there. So that's a reasonable guess.
Well, Bob, I mean, from putting your MLS exec hat on for a minute, how would you feel about, different consultants advising brokers to take, we talked about a number of strategies here, but not really pro MLS that are part of or seem to be part of the MLS community? I mean, do you look at that as just part of what they do? They're consultants, they'll play both sides of the fence all the time, or is that a bit of a conflict, or whatnot?
If you approach the management of an MLS from a defensive posture, where you're trying to protect your turf and guard against any intrusion into that turf from outsiders, then yeah, you look badly upon consultants who are talking to your major brokers about doing something you don't want them to do. But on the other side, if you're a good MLS manager and your philosophy is what's good for my brokerage community is good for the industry as a whole, and I as an MLS am here to support those efforts, then you don't shy away from that kind of input. We had exactly that happen in Arizona when we were working on the statewide initiative and trying to get the shareholders to agree to open up and bring in other MLS systems. And the brokers, after they saw that initiative collapse, hired a couple of outside consultants to come in and talk to them, people that I know well, I respect, I have good friendships with both of them. And they both called me and said, bless their pointed little heads, called and said, I've been asked to consult with this group about MLS issues. Would you have a problem with that? And I told them both, no, I have no problem with that at all. Put your bid in there and tell me how I can help. It's for progress.
Yeah, but I mean, Bob, what if their advice was to pull out of the MLS? What if that was their strategic plan?
I would have to respect that decision, even though it might mean chaos within the organization that I was managing. It's still, if we are that bad a shape, if we're in that bad a shape that the brokers are rising up with pitchforks and torches and ready to pull out, we have really done something wrong, and we need to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, what did I do to cause this, and how can I fix it?
Right.
My next question to them was just talking about something that I know I had heard, at CMLS in the immediate aftermath of this. And, I'd been conversing with people on email or elsewhere about, about this, quote, the nuclear option, the red button. Because, one of the speculation that was going around was that the brokers might work with a company like Zillow. So just kind of wanted to get their take on it. And I did tell Bob, look, we understand, given your past connection with Zillow, if there are things that you just simply can't talk about. And so feel free to talk about whatever you think you can comment on. That was sort of the context behind this. What if it's not that they would build their own network or they would build something, it's just that they would go work with, one of the major, one or more of the major portals like a Zillow, Trulia, what have you.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, because that to me would be a very true disruption. And I like it for a lot of reasons. I mean, on the blog post I wrote, I quoted from Abraham Lincoln was something to the effect of, when I make friends of my enemies, don't I destroy them, right? And I think that's a very poignant quote in the fact of talking about this issue. If the Realty Alliance struck a deal where they're going to now do a direct feed to Zillow, right, for all their listings, right, and opt out of any other kind of syndication or, you know, some exclusive deal with the portal, and they work out a mutually beneficial deal on that, that would be huge, right? Because now, you know, a friend of mine who is the person that has the same enemies as mine, right? And that could be the MLS from one standpoint, right? So I think that would be – I don't think it's going to happen. But I think that if they wanted a true kind of disruption kind of move, I think that would be the play there.
Well, I'll comment on Greg's comment to the extent that, yes, it would be hugely disruptive, but I'm not sure it would be productive for the brokers that are involved in that. If we're looking for new technology that didn't exist 2 years ago, neither Zillow, Trulia, or even Realtor.com or Homes.com fits that description. So I don't think that's where they're headed, but I have no basis for that opinion, and I have no insider information one way or the other. So beyond that, I can't speculate.
So then I relate to them the next piece of speculative speculation. I mean, speculative speculation, right? It couldn't get any more speculative than that, that I had heard one of my conversations, which was, that given that, you know, we've got some really big companies with some deep pockets, you know, Warren Buffett obviously is very involved with home services, you know, which just launched the Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. And Realogy certainly has a ton of cash. You know, they certainly have the resource to do something like this. That perhaps we're talking about, you know, an acquisition, right? That's starting off something like a portal or a technology platform like this with an acquisition. And I thought it made a lot of sense, potentially somebody like Redfin, because they're smaller, at least compared to the other portals, and they have significantly superior technology than what, you know, most of these brokerage companies have come up with to date, and so on. And this is the conversation that took place after that.
To what end would they be buying Redfin? You know, if you look at any of those brands, Berkshire Hathaway or any of the big brands within Realty Alliance, they've already got substantial websites. Most of them have substantial tools. That's why they're complaining that the MLSs are competing with them. I'm not sure they gain a lot of technology by buying a brokerage that has, yes, a good web presence, but only in 10, 15 states at the moment. And if they're not restricting themselves to just TRA companies, if they do expand and take in a Realogy, Remax, those two have huge national websites already. They're already recipients of the franchisor network data that ListHub is aggregating and sending out to those portals. So I'm not sure they gain anything by buying Redfin or any technology company for that matter. Unless you want to talk about them buying Trulia or Zillow, in which case, now that might be an interesting conversation.
I feel the same way. I mean, I'm not sure it makes sense. I mean, Redfin, you know, is kind of a brokerage model, maybe another brand, and then to unite under that brand. I don't see it that way. I don't see Redfin kind of going out like that. You know, there is, you know, maybe. Again, I don't think it's highly plausible as far as what Bob said about them buying a national portal like Zillow and Trulia. But you know, there's some acquisitions that can be made, sure. But I'm not entirely certain it would be of those type of scale.
So the final question I asked, just to close out the podcast, which again, as I keep doing these little voiceovers, I'm just mourning the loss of my voice track, was timing. You know, when did they think we were going to hear something specific? You know, have an idea just how wrong we were with our guesses. And I think I said, you know, say 10 days from the end of the Realty Alliance meeting. So 10 days from Friday, do you take the over or do you take the under? Here's how we ended that.
I think mid-year next year they might announce something. But again, I think it's going to be more of like, I think there'll be some more posturing and then, you know, some saber rattling, but then at NAR, some sort of deal will be made and it just, you know, kind of fades in the background.
Oh, the over is way over 10 days. You've got Realty Alliance considering what their next step is now, and then they have to at some point consult with these unnamed other players. Those are large organizations. They don't meet overnight and make instant decisions. I think you'll start to get an inkling of it by NAR San Francisco, second week of November. I think you'll see some dribbles coming out over the course of the winter, and I would look for a major change, a major pronouncement, or a direction by spring in Washington at the spring NAR meeting.
And that was pretty much where we ended the conversation. You know, if you sat through this choppy kind of reconstruction, then you know, then I appreciate it. Thank you. I do apologize. It's heartbreaking. You know. Believe it or not, the original recording, the original podcast was really good. A lot of back and forth. I actually thought I had some useful things to say, but of course, that's all lost. I suppose, you know, listening to all of that again, thinking through all of this once again, I think the biggest takeaway, there is so much great stuff in this podcast, but the biggest takeaway is what Bob suggested as this alternative might be. I think he's right. We are talking about, so quote, technology that was not available just a couple of years ago. So, you know, something like a private IDX type of arrangement, that kind of already exists. Some sort of national portal play, that also has existed for years. So what has changed? You know, it could be this kind of a private network type of approach, maybe a peer-to-peer, you know, solution of some sort that allows for pre-marketing of listings. And from the broker standpoint, it caused the least amount of disruption. You know, since we recorded this, I've had time to think about it even further. You know, legally, as long as the listing agreement, as long as the sellers themselves agree, then I don't see a problem, right? And most standard listing agreements today even have, you know, clauses just from, you know, necessity, just from reality. You take a listing on Friday, you're not getting it into the MLS on Saturday. A lot of times you're going to wait, you know, to have photography taken, to have staging done. I know when I sold my last house, I think almost 10 days went by, you know, between signing the listing agreement and having it in the MLS. So, I mean, that's sort of natural. It's part of the business cycle. So it seems to me it would be a fairly easy thing for somebody like the Realty Alliance or, you know, one of the large brokerages, or even some of the franchises, Coldwell Banker, Remax, Keller Williams, to kind of, you know, do a couple of things, right? One is they could pretty easily build out a way of like a marketplace, in-house marketplace, just for their own listings, as well as the pre-market listings of the companies that they would then enter into an alliance with and have that be available to all their agents, right? It would require modifying the standard listing agreement. So you would have to have the company office managers or brokers really enforce on their listing agents. If you're going to do a listing, please have them, you know, execute this standard agreement and go from there. If that gives, you know, those companies, let's say 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, you know, you would explain, you wouldn't even have to explain it that much. It would just be, yeah, so we're taking a listing today. I'm going to have it in the MLS by this date. You know, please sign here. I think most sellers would just sign it, especially if you say, yeah, you know, we have to prep it. You know, we've got to do some stuff. We've got to take staging and photography and, you know, and so on. I don't think it's going to be that big an issue. And that allows those companies, you know, in that private sort of enterprise level pocket listing network to have early access for all of their agents. And that gives them a pretty significant recruiting and retention advantage, I think. It doesn't hurt your business flow at all. You're still in the MLS eventually. You're in IDX. You don't even have to take that extraordinary step of pulling out of IDX. And that sort of private pocket listing network does not require, critically, it doesn't require the majority of listings, right? I mean, if you're, let's say you have 30%, 35% of the listings and you get together one other company that has 10%, you're below that magic 50% number. But still, just from a market availability standpoint, if there's a 2-week, 3-week period of time, especially in this low inventory environment we're in, where only the agents of those brokerages who are in this sort of alliance group have access to that. That's pretty devastating to the MLS. Right? I suppose you could eventually put that those properties into the MLS, you know, as a 0 days on market closing to get the comps and all of that. But, I mean, it would really put a hurting on a lot of the smaller brokers that, you know, potentially make up the majority, you know, of the MLS. I mean, we're talking about a scenario where, you know, potentially 20, 30, 40% of the listings, by the time it hits the MLS, it's already done. You know, it's already under contract. That could be significant. So I thought that was probably the highlight, you know, the takeaway from me. But I also appreciate their perspective on, you know, just the wide network they have, the people they talk to, you know, the experience they have. They're both, you know, been in the industry multi-decades. You know, I'm like a total baby compared to them, so I really appreciate having the conversation with them. But in any event, what can I say? It was a great time for us when we were recording it. Once again, I apologize that the technical glitches, you know, dropped that out. But, you know, even without my my yammering over it, I just felt like what Bob and Greg, you know, had to say, what the knowledge they brought was important and interesting enough to try and share it with you in this way. Now, I actually can't leave without including the last part of the podcast, where Greg, you know, just showed why he's such a funny guy and why he's such a favorite, you know, within the MLS world.
Yeah, I can't believe I made it through the whole podcast without saying fuck. I mean, this is great.
Oh yeah, now you got to edit. Jeez.
Well, if Bob thought I was going to edit the podcast just to get that out, well, he don't know me very well. In any event, it was a good time. Thanks for listening, and I will see you at the next Notorious POD, which will be number 9. Thanks very much, everybody. Have a good one. Is it real, son? Is it really real, son? Let me know it's real, son, if it's really real. Something I can feel, son. Load it up and kill one. Want to feel, son, if it's really real. When I was a little stereo, I listened to some Jeffy Young.